something that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. Hey, you try and change me, you can go to hell, 'cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth, and I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul, pour another glass of that rock and roll, turn up the band, find the hole, gonna lose control tonight. What do you want?
Good morning. It is 9:05. So glad you have come back to us here on 570 News and on Rogers Television. I just heard Paul McPhee say that, you know, decorating your house outside makes you seem more approachable and friendly to your neighbors, which, I think it does. Who doesn't like a, you know, cheerful, joyful, brightly lit house? But I got to say, you guys, Why do we need so many Snoopies in helicopters blow up things on everybody's front lawn? The tack factor. And then the people who love these blow up things on the front lawn, they don't just love one blow up thing on the front lawn. They like seven or eight blow up things on the front lawn. Like, all of a sudden, you know, you're walking down the street and like, I feel like I'm smack dab in the middle of a Santa Claus parade right now. At any minute, the Shriners are going to drive those little motorcycles around in circles, and we're going to be like, I can't do it with the blow-up things. And you know, my kid, one of them in particular, my kids, one loves the blow-up things. And they drive me bonkers. So I keep coming up with excuses as to why we can't get a giant blow-up stormtrooper. Have you been to Canadian Tire, you guys? There is a stormtrooper, a blow-up stormtrooper, that is literally taller than my house in the entryway at the one on Ottawa. And my kids are obsessed. I'm like, what? No. What does a stormtrooper have to do with Christmas in the first place? Because they are evil and they don't spread joy. Like, why do I need a two-story stormtrooper? Nobody needs that. And where am I going to store it when it's done? Does the Millennium Falcon going to land in the backyard for me to store all these Christmas decorations? Anyway, I know that's super scroogey of me. But even the lights, there was a fight at Canadian Tire about the lights. I like all white lights because I watch too much HGTV or something. I don't know. And the kids are like, let's get rainbow. And then one was like, let's get all red. I'm like, it's going to look like the best little whorehouse in Texas. You can't have all red lights on your house. No. Anyway, and I was trying really hard to just let them pick. But guess what color lights we got? That's right. We got all white lights. Because if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy, right? Okay. It's Thanksgiving in the USA. This article kind of cracked me up. There's a trend that seems to see people hosting Thanksgiving dinner, charging their family members to attend. Because it's expensive, right? So we're going to talk about that in just a couple minutes. Some people are charging their family members to come over to their house. I can think of certain family members who I'd charge much more to, you know, than other ones. From like the ones you like the most to the ones you like the least. This has got a lot of you guys upset. Two of you sent it to me via Jennifer at 570news.com about Canada Revenue Agency blocking more than half of the phone calls that come into the agency. Why are they doing that? And let's talk about their rate of accuracy as well. We'll get to that. That's from the Auditor General, that story. And we're going to talk to Aaron Woodrick, who is the federal director from the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. He's a proud Waterloo Region guy, or was, used to live here, born and raised. And we're going to get to him and talk about why the Canada Revenue Agency is blocking more than half the calls it receives from Canadian taxpayers. Also, are men finally realizing how hard it is to be a woman? We want to hear from you guys on this one as we continue watching and listening daily about the Me Too campaign and about the revelations that continue on a daily basis to come out. Great article from scarymommy.com that has some insight about men finally realizing that it's hard to be a woman. And I want to hear from you on that one, too. You can start sending me your thoughts on that, Jennifer@570news.com. As it is each and every day, if you want to join this conversation, we certainly would love you to do that. *570, 519-570-2545. And we'll begin here this morning. A lot of articles and a lot of Twitter action about this subject matter. Net neutrality. And what is it? What is net neutrality? And why does it matter? Joining us to break that down for us is Daniel Bader. He's the managing editor of Android Central. And we say thanks for joining us this morning, Daniel. Good morning.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Okay, so you and I have talked before, and you know that my brain only understands this when your brain explains it to me. So if we're talking to people who do not make, you know, their living or their passion from tech-inspired things, let's start at the very beginning. So what is net neutrality, and why have we been hearing so much about it over the past week or so?
So net neutrality is this idea that every single website, every single app, every single service that you access over the internet needs to be treated exactly the same by your internet service provider. So if you get your service from one company or the other, they cannot say, we're going to make a deal with Facebook and we're going to make all of Facebook's services run really, really well, but we don't like Twitter. So we're going to slow down Twitter and not give you access to it on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That's a really arbitrary, you know, example. But that is a real scenario that's possible in the U.S. right now, where the FCC under the new Trump administration is planning to repeal the net neutrality laws that came into effect in 2015. And those laws had been on the books or in the cards, rather, for a long time. There have been many, many advocates pushing for the idea that your internet service provider, which in the U.S., some of these companies control hundreds of millions of accounts, and they have access to billions of dollars in revenue a year. They have a lot of power, both in the Congress and just through saturation of the market in general.
So is this specifically right now, first of all, a problem just in the U.S.? And was it inspired by this Trump administration? Like, how did this come to the forefront again? Because it seems like a relatively, understandable, reasonable rule that's in place. Why revoke it?
Absolutely. So just to be clear, in Canada, net neutrality is in effect. It's actually been reinforced a bunch of times through the courts. The Canadian regulator of telecommunications has come out in favor of net neutrality. It has reinforced it over a number of really, really important situations that have prevented our own internet service providers from providing services that the regulator believes to give certain services owned by the internet service providers an unfair advantage. So, for example, Bell a few years ago was offering its own media streaming service sort of at a discount, while Netflix and others were not. And at a discount, I don't mean they were charging less, but they weren't putting the bandwidth that we pay so much for every month. That video that you were getting from Bell's service wasn't counting towards your monthly stream.
I see.
So
gotcha.
If you don't have that much data, you would be more likely to watch that media service than Netflix. In the U.S., under this new Trump administration, the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, he believes that there is too much regulation and that the market, which is highly competitive in his opinion, should take care of itself. And that's really the fundamental, is that he doesn't necessarily believe that net neutrality is a bad thing in and of itself, just that the market should be able to to govern itself, and with enough competition, people will choose the right service provider.
So letting the consumer and the market kind of decide, which of course is plays right into, you know, capitalism for sure.
Absolutely. And to some extent, you know, his arguments make sense on paper. If there is enough competition and the companies themselves are not doing anything illegal, then the consumer should be educated enough to say, Comcast is doing this thing that I don't want. I'm going to go to Verizon or AT&T. But before net neutrality laws were implemented in 2015, there were a number of things that these internet service providers did that would be considered to be contraventions of net neutrality. For example, Comcast was getting a lot of, and Comcast is the biggest internet service provider in the U.S. It has around, I think, 170 million users. They were slowing down Netflix. So if you were trying to stream Netflix, they were slowing it down to the point where if you didn't have a really fast internet connection, you would get a lot of buffering. And Netflix is really popular. So Comcast was saying, you have to pay us, Netflix, so that you can stream to our users without any slowdowns. And eventually Netflix said, okay,
wow.
We have to. We have no choice. If we want our market to increase, and this was in 2013 when Netflix wasn't as popular as it was now. This is a time where the most famous shows, Orange is the New Black, House of Cards, they were just coming out. So Netflix had no choice but to pay up. And under the net neutrality laws, that wouldn't have been allowed. And these are the kinds of things that if the net neutrality rules are pared back again, these companies like Comcast would be allowed to force others into doing.
So a lot of kind of backdoor bullying and really kind of sneaky tactics, because if my Netflix is buffering, you know, obviously as a consumer in my head, I'm annoyed by Netflix in that moment.
Exactly.
Yes.
That is precisely the problem. The internet service provider is expected to be what we consider a dumb pipe. And a dumb pipe means that you should just pay for the internet that you expect. If I want faster internet, I pay for faster internet. That means that if I pay for Netflix separately, I should be able to access Netflix just as quickly as any other service. But so the relationships between my internet service provider and the media services that I subscribe to, that should never, never come into my mind as a consumer. I should just be able to watch what I want.
So sneaky. Daniel Bader is managing editor at Android Central. We're talking about net neutrality and what it means and why it matters. So as we kind of touched on it, Daniel, together, but so the CRTC, which is the governing body of communications in Canada, the equivalent to the FCC, as you mentioned, has these net neutrality rules in place. And so right now, this is very specifically a U.S. issue.
Yeah, it's a U.S. issue, but a lot of this brings to mind the fact that different countries at different times undergo different regulatory overhauls. And Canada did not have net neutrality laws in place until maybe earlier this year, or even a little bit later last year. And even though there were things that were being done to sort of reinforce this, the CRTC came out in favor of net neutrality officially earlier this year by really saying we are not allowing any of our internet service providers to advantage their own services. Because as in the U.S., in Canada, the big companies, Rogers, TELUS, Shaw, Videotron, they own their own media portions. So Rogers does own Sportsnet. It owns the Blue Jays and the Maple Leafs, and it has a lot of these licensing rights for broadcast. So say Rogers decides that it wants to make watching its Blue Jays games not count towards your data cap. That is not allowed under the current Canadian net neutrality laws. And this is something that Bell tried to do a few years ago, and as I mentioned, that was cut down. by the CRTC, and they said you cannot, if you own a certain media property, that cannot be to the detriment of other media services. You cannot show your consumers that you would prefer them. I mean, obviously you can market your stuff independently and you can say we have great content and we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but you cannot have it not count towards your data cap,
right?
Because that data is the lifeblood of the internet. As a consumer, I know you are just as aware as many of your listeners about how expensive it is to buy both wired and wireless internet in Canada, and not having certain types of media count towards that data cap, that really does affect the way that you approach watching it.
Now I understand, Daniel Bader. Thank you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. This is a really complicated thing, but
it is.
You know, it's really important for people to know.
You made it very consumable, so thank you for that. Managing editor from Android Central, always love having you on, Daniel. Enjoy today.
All right, Jennifer.
Thank
you. So much.
Thanks. Bye bye. I wish they would not count YouTube towards my internet data usage, because that's the only thing my kids want to watch. What? Why are you watching somebody else play a video game that you actually own? Why aren't you just playing the video game? But I hear it from you guys, too. And should be said, too, that Rogers does own this company and this radio station as well. And my heart, too. Polly, you think that's going to get me a raise? What do you think? That's good, right? We're going to come back after this with people charging their family members a fee to come to Thanksgiving dinner. Mm-hmm. That's on the way. After this, this is the Jennifer Campbell Show.
When extreme weather hits, count on the 570 Extreme Weather Center, exclusively on 570 News.
All right, coming up after 9:30, we are going to talk about how the Canada Revenue Agency blocked more than half of the calls it received from Canadian taxpayers in order to obscure the performance results of its customer service division. I want them to be accurate at things, the CRA. I do. I don't want them to be sneaky. And Aaron Woodrick is the federal director from the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. We're going to talk to him about that. That's on the way. Can you imagine this? It's Thanksgiving today in America, in the USA. And there was this post via Twitter where somebody confessed that they go to their aunt's house every year for Thanksgiving. And every year at Thanksgiving, the aunt charges people, everybody who comes, $30 to come and eat Thanksgiving dinner. It's $30 a plate, which actually in the grand scheme of things seems like a pretty good deal. But can you imagine? I just think it's so tacky. It's so tacky. Is this okay with you guys? *570 519-570-2545. Can't everybody just bring a side dish? Isn't that how most people do it? Like the host will do the turkey or the ham or the goose or the duck or whatever it is that person decides is the protein. Maybe it's tofurkey, wherever you are, sure. And then everybody brings a side dish. You know, I always say, people say to me, like, what can I bring when I come to your house? I say, whatever you're good at. What's your favorite thing to make? What do people love that you make? Bring that. Because people, then it's easier on people, right? They're like, oh, I'm making my fancy noodle salad and you're going to love it. Just bring a side dish, right? Is it okay or is it tacky to charge people to come for Thanksgiving dinner? I can't even get it out without giggling a little bit. Because you're at her house and you've paid your $30 and you're going to eat your turkey dinner, but you have to sit around the table and all you want to do is talk about how tacky your aunt is, but you're at her house for dinner, so you can't. You can't even do that. Potluck, people. Let's do potluck. Or you take turns. A lot of families do that too, right? Where you kind of hop houses every year. You know, mom does it one year, and then the next year a sibling does it, and so on and so forth. I just think it's so terrible. Linda sends an email to Jennifer at 570news.com. Linda says, I can't imagine charging a fee to celebrate Thanksgiving or any other big meal holiday with anyone. Fortunately, our families share the food load by contributing to create the full meal. I do think, however, charging a fee for those who do not do their fair share of meal cleanup, including dishes, is a thing to consider. Linda, yes. Your aunt, I was on the same train of thought as you are, because I feel like I'm happy to cook the turkey and make sure the potatoes and the gravy are ready for you at the same time. And I am happy to do all of the cooking and stay in the kitchen all day long. I'd rather enjoy it, but I would like somebody else to do the dishes. I would like somebody to do the cleanup. I would. I'll confess to that. I don't love the clean. Oh, and keep uncorking the bottles of wine. Let's put Cousin Eddie on that one, because I think he needs a job. Thanks for the email, Linda. And we're out of time on this one. Let's get to the news next at 9:30, and then we're going to talk about the CRA blocking more than half of your calls. And they did it in a self-serving way. They just wanted to meet their service targets. We'll speak to Aaron Woodrick, the federal director of the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. I kind of feel like I know how he's going to feel about that one. That's next on 570 News.
With all the technology at our disposal, it's a shame that most of it is wasted on nonsense. Download the 570 News app at 570news.com and stay informed.
I mean, I dare say that just the words Canada Revenue Agency are enough to invoke fury in some of us. You know, just by title alone. But what a crazy story coming out on, I believe it was Monday, the 21st of November, from the Financial Post, that talks about the Canada Revenue Agency blocking more than half of the calls it received from Canadian taxpayers, that's you, in order to obscure the performance results of its customer services division. So basically you're calling there, and because they want their response rate, or their, you know, you not waiting on hold rate to be up high, they would just block your phone call. So you'd have to call back, and you'd have to call back, and you'd have to call back. So they were doing this purely for self-serving reasons, not because, oh, well, we're full right now. Please try again later. We're busy super serving our customers that are on the phone with us now. And it wasn't about that. It wasn't about helping you at all. It was about deception, making themselves look good. Basically, joining us to talk about this, about the CRA, is Aaron Woodrick, federal director from the Canadian Taxpayer Federation and proud Waterloo Region guy. Hi, Aaron. How are you?
How are you doing, Jen? How's my hometown today?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. We had a gorgeous sunrise this morning. It was lovely. Very, very nice.
Great.
Which is good, because talk about the, like, kind of gloom and doom of this story. It's I mean, it's so infuriating as a taxpayer, as a Canadian. I think this is probably one that no matter which political party you align yourself with, this is just a piss off.
Yeah, this one, I mean, the CRA has so much egg on their face over this, Jen. This is the Auditor General's report, of course. They investigated, you know, the call center, CRA's customer service. And as you mentioned, I mean, what they've done here, it's actually kind of diabolically clever when you think about it. We saw this in the past with hospitals where they were being measured on their wait time. So what they would do is they would just keep people from going into the waiting room, because then they wouldn't have to count them as waiting in line. And so that's what CRA did here. Somebody figured out that all we have to do is not let people actually get through on the phone, and then we don't have to count them in our statistics, and we can say, oh, yeah, the average waiting time is only 2 minutes. Yeah, because you blocked more than half the calls, so no one could get in the queue in the first place. So it's actually, you know, as I say, diabolically genius that they figured this out. But as a Canadian, I mean, the fact you're calling in the first place is probably because you have to figure out what you have to pay in taxes. And the fact that you can't even get through, and the Auditor General said some people call 3 or 4 times and they can't get through, it's absolutely infuriating.
And can they tell if, I mean, I feel like they probably, if you owed them money, they'd let the phone call through, but if they owed you money, they would not. Is that how, I mean, it really, nothing's out of the realm of imagination when they're being this dishonest about it.
Yeah, well, it gets worse, right? So first of all, more than half the time, if you try and call, you can't get through. Then the Auditor General found that if you do get through, 30% of the time, CRA gives you incorrect answers to your questions. So first of all, you've only got a 1 in 2 chance of getting through. If you do get through, you've got a 1 in 3 chance that they've given you incorrect information. And remember, you're calling them because this stuff's so complicated, you expect correct information. If one out of three times you're getting wrong information, how much confidence are you going to have in anything they ever tell you?
Well, and that's the thing. It speaks to that confidence issue because, exactly, like you say, I mean, we all probably feel like we're paying far too much money in taxes, and then sometimes we have to resign ourselves to that by being thankful and grateful we live in a country that, you know, uses our money to do things for us, is the point, I suppose. But if they can't even get the call center under control and operating efficiently, I mean, how much trust do I have in them to do their actual jobs at the Canada Revenue Agency?
Yeah, and that's what, and as you mentioned, you know, this is the agency that I think it's fair to say most Canadians have a hate relationship with to begin with. So when you call and you're not even getting correct information, I mean, and some of these were simple questions. Like one that they tested was you'd call in and say, when does the interest start to accrue on this money I owe? 84% of the time, the agent gave them the wrong answer. So, I mean, it's just
how
Canadians
is that
are...
How is that possible?
I mean, as people pointed out, this would never fly in a private sector context.
No.
I mean, any business that tried to do this would go out of business. I mean, it's just not acceptable. So, look, I think the government's really got to do something here. CRA, the silver lining is they have admitted that this is a problem and they have to fix it. I don't have that much confidence that they're going to be able to do anything because it is... You know, some people have said, well, maybe they don't have enough agents. The Auditor General pointed out they've increased the number of call agents by 23% over the last 5 years. So they have more agents, and they're answering less calls and giving more wrong answers.
Aaron Woodrick is the federal director from the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. We're talking about the CRA blocking more than half the calls it receives so it could meet its service targets. And as Aaron just pointed out, also regularly providing incorrect and wrong information to the taxpayers. Now, this came from the Auditor General. So, you know, a separate government agency kind of investigating another one. I mean, were we hearing this from customers, from taxpayers as well? Or has it just always been such a pain to deal with them that nobody was actually surprised by it?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the sad part, is a lot of Canadians probably aren't as shocked as they should be here. You know, the Auditor General is an official, they're official independent officer of Parliament. They're funded by tax dollars. They do a great job holding government to account. Our group is not a government body, but we sort of perform a similar function. And I can tell you, I get, you know, one email a day, one couple calls a week from people who are frustrated just trying to deal with CRA. And it shouldn't be this way. And, you know, to be fair, part of the problem is our tax code is so complicated that nobody really understands it. 99.9% of Canadians cannot do their own taxes because there's so many rules and regulations that it's impossible to do. So I think that's part of the problem here is we need to simplify the tax code. It shouldn't take, you know, you shouldn't need an expert just to file your taxes. And if you did that, you'd have fewer people having to call CRA in the first place and a lot less chance that they would be giving you wrong answers.
Well, and that's just it, isn't it? Even if you do have a financial background or even if you are good with numbers, like you say, it is, you're kind of, when you open those forms, you're kind of intimidated and you want to make sure that A, you're filing correctly and B, that you're getting back as much money as you possibly can or not paying in, you know, as much as you're supposed to. So many times, even those people who are competent with numbers and such are still kind of going to get extra help to do that because it's just too daunting.
Yeah, and it's a waste of everyone's time. It's a waste of money for everyone. Like, I do this for a living, Jen. I don't do my taxes by myself. I use either a professional or software because there's just so many exemptions and deductions and credits and rule. I mean, it is way too complicated. So that is, I think, the underlying long-term fix. I mean, you can throw as much money as you want at CRA as long as there are a million words in it. It's 3,000 pages long, the Income Tax Act.
Wow.
You're going to have a lot of wrong answers. So, you know, this goes beyond the debate about high or low tax. Taxes, whatever we agree on, surely we can find a simpler way to do this.
Aaron Woodrick is our guest, the federal director from the Canadian Taxpayer Federation. Just got an email from Sherry. Sherry says the Canada Revenue Agency is not concerned about the taxpayers other than just milking them for every last dime that they can get. I deal with them regularly. There's a gross amount of incompetence there. Would you agree? Would you agree with that, Aaron?
look, I don't want to make a blanket statement about all people at CRA. Some of them are good people, but I think this just highlights a regular problem with a public sector monopoly. It's not because they are worse people. It's because they don't have a lot of incentive to care about what the customer thinks, right? They're never going to go out of business. There is no alternative that people can switch to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a low priority for them because it simply doesn't matter if Canadians are angry or not. CRA is going to continue to exist. Those people will keep their jobs. So there's just not a lot of incentive to do better.
Which it's kind of like when you hear about an athlete kind of cheating, you know, to win some sort of, you know, trophy or something, or to win a race or to win the Stanley Cup or whatever. Like, you kind of think to yourself, like, have you no pride in your work? Like, do you always want to know deep down inherently that you cheated to get there? And it kind of seems like this, like, yeah, you're going to get good numbers on your service targets, but you all know that it's baloney.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And incentives matter, right? The reason in the private sector that there's better customer service generally is not because they're better people. It's because they know if they don't provide it, they're going to lose their job.
Yeah.
And you don't see that a lot of the time in the public sector, which is a hard problem to overcome.
Aaron Woodrick is our guest. Always so great to have you with us, sir. And so I always ask you, you know, okay, so what do we do? What does the taxpayer do that so give us some solid advice on this situation. What are our options here?
Well, one thing I always recommend is to write and call your MP. And people say, well, does it make a difference? They don't listen. We've seen examples like the small business tax issue that was in the news for months and months. They changed their mind on that. The government backed off because they heard from Canadians. So never underestimate your power as a citizen. If you call your representatives and they hear the same message from enough people, they certainly do adjust their course. So I certainly urge people to take matters into their own hands that way.
Always so great to have you, Aaron. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, Jen.
Take good care. Bye-bye. 9:43. Oh, doesn't it make you mad, though? It makes you so mad. And it's just kind of, it just solidifies and cements pretty much, like Aaron said, it's that hate-hate relationship that all Canadians seem to have with the CRA. I mean, I have a neighbor who is a lovely human being. He's just lovely. And he works for the CRA. And it's so funny at parties because, you know, people will be mingling and, you know, having a glass of wine, talking about the neighborhood, talking about what you do. And he always is, and he's like, oh, as soon as somebody asks him where he works, he's like, work for the CRA. He just doesn't want to, like, you can't even have any pride in your employer on that one. Cause, you know, every single person is going to have this reaction to what you do for a living. I always feel bad for him. You know, I guess we can't all have the fun jobs though. Right, Polly? Polly's like, you think my job is fun over here? Get to break, lady. Get to break. Okay. Let's come back after this. You know, I really want to hear from men on this. And actually, I think some of my feminist friends might be annoyed with me for saying that. But I do. I really want to hear from men on this. Are you finally realizing how hard it is to be a woman? Have you had this kind of like come to Jesus moment where you are understanding that kind of we're always in danger or we're always on guard? Interesting article where a man comes to terms with that. We're going to talk about that. He says, I know that simply existing as a woman can be dangerous, and I'm finally taking note of that fact. Let's talk about that. I want to hear from the men on this one. What is your feeling on this now? Star 570, 519, 570, 2545. I know a lot of men kind of felt ashamed about what was happening during Me Too. I had one friend who said, I'm like completely ashamed of my entire gender right now, and I don't know what to say, and I don't know how to approach it. So let's talk about that. Jennifer at 570news.com. Also, I'm going to read you an email, a Facebook message that was sent to me that kind of ties into this after the break. It's 9:45, 570 News.
Your home for Buffalo Bills football, 570 News.
We're getting into the final 10 minutes of the show before Mr. Farwell comes in here to take care of you into your afternoon on 570 News and on Rogers Television. Hopefully, we didn't spend too much time in the pile of fun yesterday. Because remember we got into the talk about the flat earth flat earthers. I must admit, I have not done any more. I have not done any more research on flat earthing, because it's quite a movement. It's quite a movement. And that guy in California, he blasts off on Saturday. I honestly am still struggling with that guy. Like, I want somebody to just maybe prevent his imminent death. You guys told me survival of the fittest. If you're stupid enough to launch yourself in a homemade rocket up into the sky, then you deserve what you get. But that's kind of, you know, that whole, like, this, just the sentence these days, you deserve it, just makes my skin crawl. Even if you're building rockets in your garage, right? Which is a terrible segue, but it does lead us into this next topic. Farhad Manju is a journalist. He worked for Slate Magazine for a while, and then he worked for the Wall Street Journal, and now he works for the New York Times. And the other day, some women took note of a tweet that he sent out, and here's what his tweet read. I'm at the point where I seriously, sincerely wonder how all women don't regard all men as monsters to be constantly feared. The real world turns out to be a legit horror movie that I inhabited and knew nothing about. And of course, women really liked that tweet. And because he kind of acknowledged that, you know, simply just existing as a woman is a completely different experience than it is existing as a man, and that it can be kind of dangerous. And the women noted that men are really taking note of that fact, because all the women, we know the collective struggle. We know that we need to be alert at all times. And we know when we walk somewhere alone, we're constantly scanning for danger, or maybe we're listening for footsteps, or perhaps we're planning an escape route in our head, like, okay, where do I go? How do I get out of this? If somebody is going to attack me, you know, maybe it's the keys in the hand. We've all been taught this self-defense mechanism where you kind of put your keys through your fingers so you can use them as a weapon if you need to. And it's just simply been how we have to live in the world, and something that men truly can't understand. I mean, you can't understand if it's not you. I always, like, you know, when somebody's going through something and you've been through something similar, and of course our natural reaction, because we want to empathize, we want that person to feel better, our natural reaction is to say, I know how you feel. But we never really truly, truly understand how someone feels. Isn't that right? So with this flood of sexual assault allegations in the headlines, and the daily they're pouring in, and with the resounding choruses of Me Toos on social media, I think men are noticing that. I think that men are finally saying, wow, this patriarchy is oppressive, and the toxic masculinity that builds up into this place isn't serving anybody. It's not serving men. It's certainly not serving women. And a lot of women, I think, are pleased about this. A lot of us are saying it's about damn time. It's about damn time. Let's take some calls on that from men. I want to hear from men on this. And some feminists might not like that, because a lot of that Me Too movement was, you know, listen to me, just listen to me, just listen to my story and see the frequency in which it's being told. So how are you guys feeling? How are the men feeling? Are you realizing the scale of the problem? Are you kind of, you know, coming to expect that every single day there's going to be a new person and new allegation? Are you shocked by it? Because women weren't shocked by it. We were never surprised. It never shocked us that every single one of our friends or our moms or our girlfriends or our, you know, our tribes had a story like this. We knew. But I would imagine that coming to the realization and the revelation as a man that this epidemic is immense isn't something that everybody's brain wants to accept. Alex is at Star 570. Alex, we say good morning to you.
Good morning, right back.
Hi.
There's some real pigs, men out there. There always has been, always will be. That's a small percentage of the population, and they're nasty. But I think in this debate, you got to keep in mind, first off, Ben are by far and away and above anything by numbers, the recipients of most violence in our society. I don't know one guy that I know that hasn't gotten beat up at least once, or at least been on a fight at least once. That's just something that we deal with.
If I can just say one thing for you, just if I can interject here, Alex, and then we'll come back to your second point. But remember that the balance of power is different there. As a man, you are physically stronger than I am. You are, you know, you can exert more force than I can. And often in those situations where men are being violent with each other, that was a decision that came to, like, you know, collectively between the two men. Let's be honest. Nobody just walks out to the parking lot by themselves. Alex?
No. Listen, I'm a guy. I've seen this many times. It's usually a big dude, usually picks on a smaller dude, and beats him up.
Okay, well, I've worked in bars for half my life, so I'll choose to disagree with you on that. Nobody walks out into the parking lot and beats up themselves. It doesn't happen.
I don't want to get too labored in this one because I got another point to make.
But wait one second. Alex, wait a second. I'm not done. Go back to the point of, like, Alex, how tall are you?
How tall am I?
Yeah.
Just under 6 feet.
Okay, and how much do you weigh? Do you mind me asking?
About 200 pounds.
Okay, so I'm 5'3", and on a real good day, I weigh like 148 pounds.
Yeah.
So you have to, there's a difference there, too. I'm not saying that the violence isn't prevalent in and among your gender at all. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the difference is there's a balance of power there, in this case, biologically and physically.
Well, I'll tell you, the first time I got beat up by three guys. I didn't do anything. They just attacked me and got the crap kicked out of me. So there was no let's go to the parking lot and fight. It was a blind side, and they just jumped me and beat the hell out of me.
Okay. So what's your second point, Alex?
My second point is there's a really good video that I watched. I think it was Good Morning America. I know Al Roker was in the scene, so I think that's Good Morning America. This was in the Rio Olympics. There was a young, I'm guessing 20-year-old Olympic athlete, male, on the beach in a Speedo. There was three older women, I'd say all in their late 40s by my guess. They rubbed oil all over his body for the scene. He looked uncomfortable to my eyes, and that was a big joke and a lot of laughs. There was another one at the Rio Olympics. I think it was Cosmopolitan magazine, which I think is a woman's magazine. And they had basically crotch shots of the male swimmers, and they were judging them on their bulges. Now, most guys look at that and kind of chuckle, mm-hmm. right? But I'm just saying, if that would have been reversed, if that would have been mm-hmm. a bunch of guys doing that to a young woman,
right?
There would have been a freak out of it, or if that was...
Sure, and rightfully so. I'm not saying that those two situations you're presenting to me are classy or right or had consent or not, but Alex, you can present to me, there's no such thing as reverse sexism, because the persecuted have been persecuted for so long that offering me up, you know, here and there examples of when it's happened to men too, it's just the amount of times it happens to women comparatively. And we know this from statistics, you can't compare the two as the same sized problem.
It's the human condition is what I'm trying to get at. And there are some real creepy dudes out there. If you're a creepy dude, most guys would punch you right in the nose. If you're being a creep.
Okay, Alex, I'm sorry. I have to run because I have one more call I have to squeeze on because we're up against the news here. Jody, Star 570. Hi, you've got about 60 seconds. Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I like your last point there to Alex, and I think we spent a little bit too much time with Alex there on this topic, a great topic, by the way.
I agree. Thank you, Jody.
And I like that this stuff is coming out in the media and the entertainment industry. You know, I think it's taking something kind of high profile like that to shine a light on this for other men. I think there's a lot of good guys out there, especially in this generation. You know, maybe I'm almost 50. So in my generation, I think we're kind of breaking the circle and, you know, being exposed to this stuff and actually making a conscious effort to make change. At least I like to think that I am. I know a lot of my friends are good guys, but I also know a lot of guys that you're just not going to change them. And the issue is so huge that it's like trying to, you know, change the color of the ocean with an eyedropper of red dye. And, you know, I would like to think that it would happen someday that everybody, you know, and the thing that frustrates me too is everybody no one likes to be a racist. You call somebody out for being a racist and they will defend themselves to the ends of the earth about not being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
But you call someone a sexist and it's not that big of a deal.
Not that big of a deal. Gosh, great points by you, Jody. Yeah, great points by you. Love it. Love the story. Jody had to go because I'm already a minute late and the news needs to go for you at 10 a.m. Great points by Jody. Please call again, Jody. I needed like 8 more minutes with Jody. Maybe half an hour. I like him a lot. Thanks so much for your time. Again, it just flies right by. Mike Farwell is going to take you through the next couple hours and into your afternoon on this Thursday. Thanks so much again, and we'll see you in the morning.